What makes a good high school SCOTUS nerd? Well, I knew none of the kids who have joined my blog before they reached out to me. All of them, except for one who I found on Twitter, has emailed my blog through the About page, just said who they were, what they'd be interested in writing about, and I've just said yes. I couldn't believe kids wanted to write for my blog. It still feels like a tiny little thing that I worked on like Thursday afternoons, but these really impressive kids who have really done a lot more law-oriented things than I have, kids who are on the debate team, who are in their student government, who are really just impressive kids in general, have reached out to me, and I've said yes to all of them. They've all been great. They're really interested in the court. They're really nerdy. We can share Supreme Court memes with each other in the High School SCOTUS group chat, and they're just really nice people, too, and I'm so lucky to have these friends who are supportive and encouraging of whatever I'm doing and what the blog is doing.
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, October 2nd, 2018. Anna Salvatore is the impresario behind the High School SCOTUS blog. She got in touch with me a number of months ago asking for an interview and produced a fascinating character study of me. Today, I returned the favor. She joined me in the Jungle Studio for a wide-ranging discussion of the Supreme Court, high school, blogging, and building an army to produce legal journalism. We talked about how the Supreme Court is different from baseball. We talked about weird interests in high school. We talked about following a docket. And we talked about the Kavanaugh nomination hearings. It's the Lawfare Podcast, episode 352, High School SCOTUS Visits Lawfare. So how old are you?
I'm 16.
So this is, I think, the first episode of the Lawfare Podcast in which the guest is a minor. Tell us about yourself. Where do you come from and how did you come to be in our podcast studio?
Sure thing. So I am a high school junior from Pennington, New Jersey. I'm a really big nerd. I've been a bookworm since I was a little kid, and I've had various little interests over the years, the Beatles, the Yankees, and more recently the Supreme Court, which is kind of why I'm here. So in March, I started a blog called High School SCOTUS, and to my surprise, it's caught on a little bit.
Right. So let's talk about that. This is actually the second interview we've done together. The first one was the roles were reversed. You were asking me questions. Mm-hmm. It was over the phone. I'm interested how you got interested in the Supreme Court, but also in particularly in writing and blogging about the Supreme Court, and in interviewing people who have had careers in law.
Well, my interviewing started with people who were not involved in the law at all. I probably did my first interview in my freshman year of high school, and I kind of used my school newspaper as a vehicle to talk to people, not because I'm particularly good at talking to people, but because I thought they were interesting and that I might be able to learn more about their career, what made them tick, what they were like as high schoolers, stuff like that. So I interviewed my congresswoman, and that went pretty well. And from there, I just kind of started calling up different people, spoke with Peter Baker of the New York Times, and he was incredibly nice and encouraging. As for the Supreme Court, it just seemed like a natural thing to do once I got my blog going. I started the blog because I didn't really have anyone to talk to the Supreme Court about at school. Kids my age generally don't really care about it, at least at my high school, and it's hard to be super interested in something without having anyone to talk to about it. So I just decided to get my thoughts on paper, stop annoying my parents about the court, and just get stuff down. Interviewing people came naturally from there. I could talk to Supreme Court experts and kind of hear what they had to say about the court, hear what they were doing when they were my age, and see how maybe I could get better at what I'm doing and just learn more about the institution.
Why the Supreme Court, of all things to be interested in? I mean, I'm somebody who has been a legal writer my entire professional life. I don't remember when my consciousness of the Supreme Court as a really interesting institution and as an institution that I should be following its work product developed. But it was not in high school. Like, how did you come to be interested in the Supreme Court and writing about it?
I think my obsession is kind of unusual in that I can track it to a specific day and a specific time and a specific day. I was in a study hall in my freshman year, I think, and I was really bored, didn't have a lot of work to do, and I started reading the New York Times website. And then I stumbled across an article about this case called Maslenjak, which in itself wasn't even that interesting of a case when compared to, like, the major blockbusters the normal person might hear about. But as I said, I'm a nerd, and when I read it, I was just fascinated by the arguments and surprised that I could understand them. That case happened to be a pretty funny argument, too. The justices had a good kind of dynamic with the lawyers, and they were making kind of funny jokes. So I figured, why not read some more arguments? I have nothing to do in this study hall. Can't hurt. And from there, I just became really interested in it and started reading books about the Supreme Court, went to the library, ransacked my dad's bookshelf. Why did I start writing about it? As I said, I didn't really have anyone to talk to about it, and it was driving me crazy.
There are a lot of ways to be interested in an institution. You compared it to your interest in the Yankees. So if you're interested in the Yankees, you watch a lot of games, right? Mm-hmm. And some games are more interesting than others because sometimes, you know, they're playing the Red Sox and sometimes they're, you know, not, right?
Yeah.
But a baseball game is kind of a baseball game is kind of a baseball game at the end of the day. They all have nine innings. They all have, you know, people playing the same positions. A Supreme Court case is not the same as another Supreme Court case. The substantive content of it is radically different. Are you interested in all of the work product of the Supreme Court, or are you interested in certain case areas, you know, dramatically more than others?
To be honest, I'm still figuring it out. Everything is so interesting to me at this point, and I know so little. I'm so ignorant compared to the majority of people who really follow the court, the journalists who are writing about this every day. They know the ins and outs. I started very recently, so...
So what do you do to keep up? Like you were here yesterday for the opening arguments. Mm-hmm. But, like, what constitutes for you following the activity of the Supreme Court?
Well, it's been a little different over the past few weeks with the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing. Unfortunately, I've been in school. I have to be in school. So when Kavanaugh's hearings are going on, I'll try to stream C-SPAN in between classes, keep up with it on Twitter. I'm on Twitter way too much, always on Twitter. And that's pretty helpful for keeping up with what's going on. During a normal humdrum term, I'll try to read any...
What do you mean a normal humdrum? You've had two terms that you're...
I know.
Like, you had last year from March to June, and you've got this year, which started yesterday. What's a normal term to you?
Last year, when there wasn't a lot of crazy confirmation stuff going on, Kennedy was still on the court, and they were just hearing regular cases, I guess, and I was at school. That's like the humdrum period.
I see. So you mean when the issue is, when you say humdrum, you mean when the issue is what the Supreme Court is doing rather than what's being done about the Supreme Court.
That's a much better way of putting it. Yes. So when it's just about the issues in the cases, I will read the oral argument transcripts after school, listen to them if I can. Definitely read any opinions that come out. Read a bunch of different blogs during school when I probably shouldn't be, like the Volokh conspiracy.
SCOTUS blog, right?
SCOTUS blog is terrific.
Because you kind of named your site after SCOTUS blog.
A little bit. Yeah, just reading a bunch of blogs, oral argument transcripts, opinions, going on Twitter like a maniac, and listening to podcasts too. First Mondays is pretty unparalleled.
So you're basically at this point functioning, following the institutional work product of the court unless the specific case is too boring. Is that right?
Fair enough.
Like the average case, you're going to at least take a look at all the opinions, look at the docket, read the briefs, read the oral arguments, and the case might bore you. You may not finish it, but you're basically looking at the aggregate work product at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll try to follow most everything, which can be hard, but I just won't write about it or bother tweeting about it, stuff like that. And maybe I'm not even able to understand it either. I don't pretend to understand every single case or even most cases. But if I can distill it into something that's understandable for high schoolers or my family and friends, and now it seems other people who read the blog on Twitter, then that's a good thing.
So what kind of traffic is the site getting?
It depends on the day.
I mean, I've got your competition, so I got to figure out what we're up against here.
Yeah, right. I think if you took an audio soundbite of you sneezing and put it on your site, it would probably get more hits than my blog has ever gotten.
You never know. So let's talk about your traffic.
Okay,
when you started it, you were working on family and friends.
Oh, for sure. If that. When I first started it, I was excited to get 15 views in a day. That was a good day for me. Howard Bashman of How Appealing, you've probably heard of him. He's on Twitter.
Yep.
If he ever retweeted one of my things, I'd get 30 views, and that would be like, whoa, what a great day. Not to dismiss what he was doing or anything. That was very nice.
No, it's the appellate law community is small to begin with. The high school appellate law community is really small.
But growing.
growing.
We're
going to talk about the army you're building in a minute, but
I've appropriated that for my Twitter bio. I don't know if
it's
amassing an army. But anyway, back to the statistics. Now I've been getting like 30 views a day, 40 views a day, 50, and it's growing. Since NPR, it's kind of been a little higher. I'm approaching 25,000 views as a whole. I think I'll meet that by the end of the day.
And what do you know about who those people are? You have a lot of Twitter admirers who are people with significant followings. And so that community of people has definitely brought you to the attention of a lot of other people. In addition, a lot of people listen to NPR, and you were featured on NPR recently. Do you have a sense of like who is reading High School SCOTUS?
A little bit of a sense. On WordPress, which my site is based on, I can see the referrals, so how people got to my blog. The overwhelming amount is from Twitter, but occasionally I'll see How Appealing on there. Google search terms after NPR, that skyrocketed like crazy. So it's not a great way of knowing where people are coming from. Twitter is definitely, it's a direct view of who's talking about me, retweeting it, and that's been cool. All these people who I admire and read their work have sort of been interacting with the blog, and that's insane. I'm still not quite sure this is real. A bunch of Supreme Court journalists I'm interacting with now, a bunch of just legal writers in general. It's definitely not an exaggeration to say more journalists are reading it than high schoolers.
That is actually not merely not an exaggeration, but it's a very interesting observation, right? Because what you're doing is recognizably legal journalism, and it's not recognizably high school, right? And mm-hmm. So a whole bunch of people who are in my line of work look at something like High School SCOTUS and say, wow, you know, I know what this is. And I don't think it's an accident that the legal journalism community has kind of, you know, enveloped you in a big hug. So you have had about 8 months of High School SCOTUS in which you've been following the docket, reading a lot of briefs. What areas of law are you interested in? Like, what are the ones that jump out? And when the docket has an ERISA case, you say your heart goes pitter-patter. What's the exciting stuff?
Death penalty stuff is interesting. Like the case that's happening today, Madison, about whether they can execute somebody who has no memory of his crime. That's the simplified version of it. That stuff really interests me. First Amendment law is super interesting. Simplistic to say, but really everything is interesting to me at this point. I don't really have an idea of what I want to focus on yet. So any case that comes out really has the potential to be awesome, like the immigration case I started with.
And when you think about, like, you're not going to be in high school forever. So you'll have to change it to like college SCOTUS at some point.
I don't know what to do about that.
We're gonna get to that in a minute. And then there'll be like graduate school SCOTUS or
nursing
like,
home SCOTUS.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you're presumably thinking about all this stuff that you're writing about somehow in terms of you 10 years, 15 years, 20 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the Supreme Court, do you say that's something, this what I'm doing now, this kind of legal journalism is me, I'm just doing a proto version of it now, but this is actually what I'm going to do with my life? Or do you look at the building and say, I want to practice as a lawyer in there? Or do you look at the bench and say, give me one of those seats. What's the ambition that, if any, that you have with respect to yourself in relation to the institution that you're writing about?
That's such a good question. I could definitely see myself being a Supreme Court journalist. I've always looked up to Adam Liptak of the New York Times and thought, if I could do that with my life, I'd be pretty happy. And it's starting to look like it's within reach, and that's very exciting to me to think about. If I just kind of continue on this path, I might just end up covering the Supreme Court for a living. But I'm trying to keep it open and realize that I might not even like the Supreme Court in a few years. I might just get totally burned out and be like, I hate this. I'm going to start like painting houses in Guatemala. And I just got to be okay with that and realize it doesn't do yourself any good to lock yourself into a box. I don't think I'll practice in front of the court or want to do that. That just doesn't appeal to me.
And what doesn't appeal to you? Oral advocacy or going to law school or, you know, the process of appellate litigation?
Law school's interesting because I think I would love it. I think it would be a great environment and I could hang out with other nerds. And all the adults around me are like, oh, so you're going to law school. Where would you like to go? That would be really cool. But if I'm not going to practice law or work in a firm, it might not be the best fit for me. So I'm working that out. I'm trying to hammer the nervousness out of me by talking on different like podcasts like this and interviewing people. It's gradually becoming easier. So the public speaking thing is less of a thing I'm actively fearing. But I still can't imagine myself walking up confidently answering questions.
I don't know. You're just sitting there confidently answering questions. All right. I want to talk about the relationship between high school SCOTUS and Lawfare.
Mm-hmm.
Because both high school SCOTUS and Lawfare are institutions where somebody just started doing something. In Lawfare's case, it was three people mm-hmm. who just started doing something. We started writing about national security law. You started skipping math class and writing about the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of caught on. And then we started amassing other people around us who wanted to write about national security law. And we started bringing other people in who shared the interest and the particular sensibility. And you have started adding other people. Now there's a bunch of you to high school SCOTUS. And there's this kind of institutional band that you've created, uh-huh. This sort of army you're amassing of high school SCOTUS interested people. Who are they? And what makes somebody a good addition to high school SCOTUS?
It's so funny to think of my blog as an institution.
It's the only institution of its kind, as far as I know.
Yeah. Thank you. What makes a good high school SCOTUS nerd? Well, I knew none of the kids who have joined my blog before they reached out to me. All of them, except for one who I found on Twitter, has emailed my blog through the About page, just said who they were, what they'd be interested in writing about. And I've just said yes. I couldn't believe kids wanted to write for my blog. It still feels like a tiny little thing that I worked on like Thursday afternoons. But these really impressive kids who have really done a lot more law-oriented things than I have. Kids who are on the debate team, who are in their student government, who are really just impressive kids in general have reached out to me. And I've said yes to all of them. They've all been great. They're really interested in the court. They're really nerdy. We can share Supreme Court memes with each other in the high school SCOTUS group chat, which I can't say I'd been able to do before with my normal school friends. And they're just really nice people, too. You don't want to work with people who are jerks. And I'm so lucky to have these friends who are supportive and encouraging of whatever I'm doing, what the blog is doing, and just share my nerdiness.
So yesterday, a bunch of you, the high school SCOTUS army, showed up in Washington for the opening day of oral arguments. You were telling me before we started taping that was the first time you'd ever met.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about it.
So all but one of us were able to come. Jackson, we missed you. He's in Alabama. But yeah, Caleb, Joe, Brenna, Kai, and I converged on D.C. to see oral arguments yesterday. They came from Walla Walla, Washington, Asheville, North Carolina, Manhattan, and Oklahoma. So it's a pretty cool, geographically diverse bunch of kids. And I organized it through basically just texting them and seeing if they wanted to see an oral argument. They're like, of course. And we just rented out an Airbnb and watched like Supreme Court clips on YouTube and read the briefs together. It was pretty dorky, and we had so much fun.
Before we wrap up, I want to talk about the Supreme Court divisions. One of the things that, you know, particularly in the context of the Kavanaugh nomination, that everyone's talking about is the sort of balance of the court and the sort of 5-4 majority, minority quality of it. Do you have a dog in the fight over who controls the Supreme Court, or are you just kind of interested in it? Like, there's a lot of reasons that people care about this institution. And one of the reasons is that they care substantively what it does, right? They're, you know, they have some issue set that they're passionate about. Mm-hmm. Another reason is just that the institution is inherently interesting itself, and they don't deeply care who wins and loses. What's your relationship with the division of the court and the substantive activity of the court?
I don't think I have too much of a dog in the fight. I didn't start being interested in the court because I was like, gee whiz, I hope they overturn this statute. And I'm not interested now because I want them to strike down all the administrative state regulations. I just like when it functions normally, when it functions as a relatively nonpartisan institution, and the focus is on the cases, however interesting or boring they may be. It's kind of sad to see the institution being kind of on attack from all sides right now, and probably the majority of Americans don't trust it anymore. That's pretty sad to see as a court watcher. So I just wanted to return to normal, if there is such a thing.
Have you spent any time with any other courts? I mean, one court that we've spent a lot of time talking about recently for reasons of also Brett Kavanaugh and where he comes from, mm-hmm. is the D.C. Circuit.
Oh, yeah.
Have you spent any time with the D.C. Circuit?
I wish I had. I started the blog, and it was kind of arbitrary that I fell onto the Supreme Court. It could have been anything. And the D.C. Circuit might even be more interesting than the Supreme Court.
Well, it's interesting in a very different set of ways.
Oh, yeah. And there's tons of different courts. There's the FISA court, which is
you couldn't do like high school FISA court because there's not enough of its docket is public, like almost none.
True.
It would be a very quiet blog.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different courts that I'm interested in, but have barely researched or looked at, and I sort of wish I had.
Well, you have time.
I do have time.
Notwithstanding that you were in school during most of the Kavanaugh hearings, yep. What did you make of it?
It was a weird piecemeal way of hearing what was going on with little bits of Twitter and little bits of C-SPAN. It just looked like a mess from what I could see. A bunch of senators yelling at each other. Nobody's minds really being changed either way. Just really a depressing spectacle. That's what I got from it.
I'm curious, without asking you to talk about the substance of the allegations, I think one of the hardest and most interesting questions is that the Senate confronts in a situation like this is, what do you do with a nominee who there is some real chance did something horrible and is lying about it, mm-hmm. but you're not certain enough. You're not certain about that. And I'm curious, when you look at it, you're not a senator, you're not a at this point anyway, a judicial nominee. But you look at somebody like Brett Kavanaugh and you say, what if you were a New Jersey senator instead of a New Jersey high school student, mm-hmm. how would you look at somebody who there was some chance did something horrible and you were being asked to vote yes or no on putting them on this institution?
It's an interesting question. I think Quinta tweeted something recently. If you're not sure about something, does it make more sense to vote yes or vote no? Because I think Jeff Flake said, I'm not sure, I'll vote yes. It's an interesting question, and it depends on the person, maybe your political party. If I were a Democratic senator, I don't think I could get reelected and vote for Kavanaugh. If I were a Republican senator, that's probably a more interesting situation. I tend to think of it like you do, as if it's a job interview. This isn't an actual court proceeding. And I think I'd view it through that frame, whether or not he convinces you that he's right for the job and that this is true or not.
All right. So if the next time you come to Washington
for
a Supreme Court oral argument, one of the people sitting there behind that bench is Brett Kavanaugh. Do you look at him like a normal justice, or do you look at him like a guy with who's like different from the rest of them?
I think he will be a normal justice. I think he'll be pretty undistinguishable from Alito in his voting record, maybe in his writing style. But I will definitely look at him a little differently. He'll be the most well-known justice apart from RBG in the country. Everybody knows his name now, and the focus will be on him. It's going to be hard to forget everything that's happened, whether or not the allegations are even true. That confirmation hearing is not going to go away. So, yeah, I think it'll be in the back of my mind for better or worse.
The blog is High School SCOTUS. My guest has been Anna Salvatore. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
The Lawfare podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. Thanks this week to Michaela Fogel for being our audio engineer. Our editor is Jen Patya Howell. Our music is, as always, performed by the one, the only Sophia Yan. You need to do your part to promote the Lawfare podcast, so do it, people. Tweet us, share us on Facebook, give us a rating on whatever podcast distribution services you use. And of course, as always, thanks for listening.